Okay, welcome everybody for this sutta class, and today we're going to be looking at Majjhima Nikaya number 151, the Pindapata Parisuddhi Sutta. This is about the qualities that a bhikkhu, or presumably also a bhikkhuni, should have, and also to purify the alms and the mental purity that they have while collecting alms on the alms round. And this particular sutta has one parallel in the Sanyukta Agama, Sanyukta Agama 236, like all of the suttas in this chapter, only has a Sanyukta Agama parallel, no Madhyama Agama parallels, and this also has a partial parallel in the Akotara Agama. In this case, the Akotara Agama parallel has a similar introduction to the current sutta, but the body of the teaching in the sutta is completely different. So let's have a look through the text. Thus have I heard, on one occasion the Blessed One was living at Rajagaha in the bamboo grove, the squirrel sanctuary. Then when it was evening, Venerable Sariputta rose from meditation and went to the Blessed One. After paying homage to him, he sat down at one side. The Blessed One then said to him, Sariputta, your faculties are clear. The colour of your skin is pure and bright. What abiding do you often abide in now, Sariputta? Now, Vande, I often abide in voidness. Good, good, Sariputta, indeed you often abide in the abiding of a great man, for this is the abiding of a great man, namely voidness. The word voidness, of course, sunyata, more commonly translated as emptiness. So sunyata viharena. Now abide in the attainment of emptiness. Now, what this actually means is a little bit mysterious. Clearly, we're talking about a profound meditation attainment. When it's talking about what abiding do you often abide in now, the word is vihara, and that word vihara in this kind of sense usually means like what kind of meditation state has he been in? Now, of course, one would expect that a great disciple like Venerable Sariputta, whatever kind of meditation that he was sitting in, would have been fairly cool. But we don't know exactly how cool it is. Is it jhanas? Is it formless jhanas? Is it something kind of vipassana-ish or something? We're not quite sure. So the Buddha asks, what is it? And he says, I abide in emptiness. Now this is actually quite a subtle and somewhat difficult topic in the suttas, but it seems that there's a way in which an arahant can practice a particular meditation state, which according to the commentaries they call the arahata pala samapatti, the attainment of the fruition of arahantship, and in that meditation attainment, which is actually like a specific meditation state, then the arahants can enter that, and it's like the way I understand that attainment of arahantship is that just as when you the attainment of jhana is an absorption of concentration of mind which is based on the abandoning of the five hindrances, and so too this fruition attainment of arahantship is an absorption of mind which is based on the abandoning of greed, hatred, and delusion. And just as the abandoning of greed, hatred, and delusion is a far more profound thing than the mere abandoning of the five hindrances, so too this particular attainment is far more profound than mere jhana, if I dare to use that term. And so you find statements where the gods and so on come and they say, we don't know what kind of meditation that you're doing, there's like this kind of mysterious quality to it, as indeed you find in this particular sutta where even the Buddha is asking him about it. Of course, doesn't mean the Buddha didn't know, but clearly it was thought it was something that was worth asking about and bringing up in conversation. So I don't want to go into too much into the details of this. The classic modern study of this, of course, was Venerable Nyanananda's the Concept and Reality. So he goes into quite a lot of detail into these things, and also another one which was quite good on the topic was Peter Harvey's book, which I can't remember the title of it now, something about consciousness. And Bhikkhu Bodhi refers to another couple of notes here. I'm just seeing if there's anything. So the doctrinal issue at question here is that this particular state of arahantship, of course, is in a sense it is a meditation. It is a state of consciousness, no matter how profound it is. It's a state of consciousness, and so it feeds into or relates to this whole kind of question about whether nibbana can itself be considered to be a state of transcendental or metaphysical consciousness. And of course the general tenor of the suttas is that nibbana is the cessation of consciousness. But there are of course many teachers and scholars and so on who would like to argue that vijnana is in fact a kind of transcendental consciousness. And these kinds of passages are some of the kinds of passages which tend to sort of support that idea, or are used to support that idea in any case. But in any case, I mean, it's fairly obvious that this particular passage is talking about a specific meditation attainment, which Sariputta's sitting in, and it's not talking about what happens, for example, to an arahant after they pass away. So this is how I take it, is that Venerable Sariputta is abiding in this special abiding, and that's the Mahapurisa, of course, being a term for an arahant, a great man. Okay, going on. So Sariputta, if a bhikkhu should wish, may I now often abide in voidness, he should consider thus. So notice that using that phrasing, if a bhikkhu should wish, is harking back to some of the earlier suttas in the Majjhima Nikaya. It's almost as if it's sort of rounding off the Majjhima Nikaya a bit. The Akankheya Sutta, if a bhikkhu could wish, gives a very similar kind of structure. It's Majjhima 6. If a bhikkhu should wish, may I now often abide in voidness, he should consider thus. On the path by which I went to the village for alms, or in the place where I wandered for alms, or on the path by which I returned from the alms round, was there any desire, lust, hate, delusion, or aversion in my mind regarding forms cognizable by the eye? If, by so reviewing, he knows thus, on the path by which I went to the village for alms, or in the place where I wandered for alms, or on the path by which I returned from the alms round, there was desire, lust, hate, delusion, or aversion in my mind regarding forms cognizable by the eye, then he should make an effort to abandon those evil, unwholesome dhammas. But if by reviewing he knows thus, on that path, or the place I wandered for alms, on the path I returned, there was no desire, lust, hate, delusion, or aversion in my mind regarding forms cognizable by the eye, then he can abide happy and glad, training day and night in wholesome states. And again, Sariputta, a bhikkhu should consider thus, on the path by which I went to the village for alms, or in the place where I wandered for alms, or on the path by which I returned from the alms round, was there any desire, lust, hate, delusion, or aversion in my mind regarding sounds cognizable by the ear, or odours cognizable by the nose, flavours cognizable by the tongue, or tangibles cognizable by the body, or mind objects cognizable by the mind? If by reviewing he knows that there was, then he should make an effort to abandon those evil, unwholesome dhammas. But if on reviewing he knows that there wasn't, then he can abide happy and glad, training day and night in wholesome dhammas. So this, of course, is the practice of sense restraint. The special opportunity for that practice is, of course, going to village for alms. Again, Sariputta, a bhikkhu should consider thus, are the five cords of sensual pleasure abandoned in me? If by reviewing he knows thus, the five cords of sensual pleasure are not abandoned in me, then he should make an effort to abandon those five cords of sensual pleasure. But if by reviewing he knows thus, the five cords of sensual pleasure are abandoned in me, then he can abide happy and glad, training day and night in wholesome states. And I think we've remarked on this before, but the translation, the five cords of sensual pleasure, is really a bit of a mistranslation. It's based on the Pali Panchakama Guna, and the word Guna is glossed in the Pali commentary as meaning like a cord or a tie, which is a fair enough as a sort of kind of etymological kind of punning explanation of the word, but Guna doesn't normally mean that, and it's never given that explanation in the northern schools. It's purely seems to be a Pali explanation, as far as I'm aware. So probably better just to say the five kinds of sensual pleasure. You know, I'll give it a more neutral rendering. Again, Sariputta, a bhikkhu should consider thus, are the five hindrances abandoning me? If by reviewing he knows thus, the five hindrances are not abandoning me, then he should make an effort to abandon the five hindrances. But if by reviewing he knows thus, the five hindrances are abandoning me, then he can abide happy and glad training day and night in a wholesome state. Again, Sariputta, a bhikkhu should consider thus, are the five aggregates affected by clinging fully understood by me? If by reviewing he knows thus, the five aggregates affected by clinging, or better, grasping, are not fully understood by me, then he should make an effort to fully understand those five aggregates affected by grasping. But if by reviewing he knows thus, the five aggregates affected by grasping are fully understood by me, then he can abide happy and glad, training day and night in wholesome dhammas. Again, Sariputta, a bhikkhu should consider thus, are the four foundations of mindfulness developed in me? If by reviewing he knows that they're not developed, then he should make an effort to develop the four foundations of mindfulness. But if on reviewing he knows thus the four foundations of mindfulness are developed in me, then he can abide happy and glad, training day and night in wholesome dhammas. Again, Sariputta, a bhikkhu should consider thus, are the four kinds of right striving, the four bases of spiritual power, the five faculties, the five powers, the seven enlightenment factors, and the noble eightfold path developed in me. Of course, these being altogether taken are the 37 Bodhipakkhya dhammas. Also, our serenity and insight, Samatha Vipassana, developed in me. If by reviewing he knows thus, Samatha Vipassana are not developed in me, then he should make an effort to develop them. But if by reviewing he knows that they are developed, then he could abide happy and glad, training day and night in wholesome dhammas. Then Sariputta, a bhikkhu should consider thus, are true knowledge and deliverance realized by me? If by reviewing he knows that true knowledge and deliverance are not realized, then he should make an effort to realize them. But if by reviewing he knows that they're realized, then he can abide happy and glad, training day and night in wholesome dhammas. Sariputta, whatever recluses and Brahmins in the past have purified their alms food, have all done so by repeatedly reviewing thus. Whatever recluses and Brahmins in the future will purify their alms food, will all do so by repeatedly reviewing thus. Whatever recluses and Brahmins in the present are purifying their alms food, are all doing so by repeatedly reviewing thus. Therefore, Sariputta, you should train thus. We will purify our alms food by repeatedly reviewing thus. This is what the Blessed One said. The Venerable Sariputta was satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Yep. Yeah. Well, quite likely that there were others present, yeah.
Maybe he just kind of took Sariputta as a starting point and was addressing everybody else. You know, if you want to be like Sariputta and have emptiness and have fun and
right.
Then you better do this and do that.
Yeah.
I mean that he's actually saying to Sariputta.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
It does raise an interesting question, though. I mean, we shouldn't, as always with these things, we shouldn't pass over the question, because there is a somewhat curious disjunction between the first part of the sutta, which is a conversation between the Buddha and Sariputta about the abiding in emptiness, and then the rest of it, which is all about how you should practice for going for alms. But even the practice going for alms then also seems to be a little bit kind of extended. The first part of it is pretty straightforward. They practice sense restraint while you're on alms, very sensible. But then later on it goes into very general Dhamma teachings which don't seem to be specifically connected with going for alms, like about, you know, understanding the five aggregates or something like that. So it's interesting to notice those details in the structure. Of course it could well be the case. You know, the Buddha's taking up this particular instance. Quite likely there was a group of bhikkhus around. We're talking, you know, the Buddha's, you know, sitting there in the evening in Rajagaha in the bamboo grove. So it's a large monastery. There's quite likely a lot of people around. The Chinese version set in Sarvati, of course, but...
And the bhikkhus.
Right, so we assume that there are other bhikkhus there. But let's just have a quick look at the... parallel and see whether we can glean anything from that. Until the end, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the basic introduction is somewhat similar, but there is an important difference. Is that according to the Chinese version, it actually says that Sariputta had gone for alms before retiring to seclusion to meditate. Okay, so there's a connection there about going for alms round, which is sort of ties the sutta together a bit more. Another difference is that according to the Pali version, the Buddha inquired after the purity of Sariputta's faculties, while according to the Sarvastivadin version, the Buddha asked Sariputta where he had come from. And on being told that Sariputta had come from his daily abiding in meditation in the forest, the Buddha asked Sariputta what meditation he had been practicing. In both cases, the Ekotara Agama version, the partial parallel in the Ekotara Agama, agrees with the Pali version. So we have one tradition, curiously enough, in the Pali and the Ekotara Agama, and another tradition in the Sanyukta Agama. But moving along, according to both versions, the Buddha explained that in order to relate dwelling in emptiness, so this is from Analio's comparative study, so a monk should examine, if they want to be able to dwell in emptiness, then a monk should examine if anything he'd seen while going for alms or returning had caused the arising of desire in him. And they have a slightly different list of defilements here. The Pali, as we've heard, has desire, lust, anger, delusion, and irritation, whereas the Sanyukta Agama has desire, affection, thoughts of craving, and attachment. So it seems like all of the ones in the Sarvastivadin version are about desire, whereas the Pali has greed, hatred, and delusion all in there, which seems to be probably a bit better, because it's certainly not the case that when you go for alms that everything is attractive and nice all the time, and that's the only problem about going for alms. You very frequently meet things that are annoying and so on, and you also very frequently meet things that are delusory and confusing. In fact, depending on where you go for alms, if you go to a shopping centre for alms, they're specifically designed to be delusory and to shine bright lights at you from all directions so that you lose your sense of who you are and so on. So it seems to be a bit more appropriate in the Pali version there. The Majjhima Agama version continues by applying the same treatment to the other senses, whereas the Sanyukta Agama version only takes up the case of visual forms, rather than going through the six senses. Now, this is an interesting little difference. I haven't looked at the details of this in the Sanyukta, but I would suspect what the reason for that difference is that this sutta that we have in the Pali is in the Majjhima Nikaya. In the Chinese, it's in the Sanyukta Agama. So as a sutta in the Sanyukta Agama, it's one of how many, perhaps 100 or perhaps 200 suttas, all dealing with the six senses. Okay, so when you have 100 suttas in a row, all talking about the six senses, before too long, the copyists get a bit bored. And they don't write down all of the six senses all the time, and they abbreviate stuff. And so that it becomes, as often they would mark the abbreviations, but at a certain point, they'll even give up marking that there's an abbreviation, and they just is taken for granted. So I think that's more likely that this is just an artifact of the redaction rather than being having any doctrinal significance. Okay, according to both versions, if on examination the monk finds out that unwholesome dhammas have arisen in his mind, he should make a firm effort to overcome them. The Sanyukta Agama version, that's the Sarvastivadin version in Chinese, illustrates this effort with the image of a man whose head is on fire, a situation where this man would make an utmost effort to extinguish that fire. If a monk finds that his mind remained unaffected by unwholesome dhammas, then he may dwell happily and continue to train himself day and night with energy and mindfulness. Of course, the simile of the man with the head on fire needing to practice to put the thing out is very commonly found in the Pali Nikayas as well, especially in the Anguttara Nikaya, and Venerable Anālaya in his study gives a list of references. Sanyukta Agama discourse continues by indicating that to dwell happily in this way, free from defilements, and to train in wholesomeness while walking, standing, sitting and lying down is the way to develop purity in regard to begging for food. Okay, so this is somewhat different from the Pali. So the Pali doesn't have the mention of the four postures. After having in this way clarified in which way a monk can become a pure recipient of alms food in the sense of becoming a worthy recipient, the Sanyukta Agama discourse concludes with the delighted reaction of Sariputta after having heard this exposition from the Buddha. So the Sanyukta Agama version, as befits a Sanyukta style text, is shorter and sticks more closely to the topic of the six senses. Pali version, of course, continues by bringing up a whole range of other topics, which we've already been through: the five types of sensual pleasure, the five hindrances, the five aggregates, four satipatthanas, four eight efforts, four bases of psychic power, four five faculties, five powers, seven factors of awakening, eightfold noble path, samatha and vipassana, and knowledge and liberation, none of which are found in the Chinese parallel. The Majjhima Nikaya version continues by explaining that samanas and brahmins of the past, present and future times have, do and will develop purity in regard to receiving alms food by undertaking all of these practices. So that passage also absent in the Sanyukta Agama version. Since this entire presentation is absent from the Chinese version, and since it does not seem to be indispensable from the viewpoint of the basic theme of the discourse, one might wonder how far the presentation in the Majjhima Nikaya version could be the outcome of a later expansion of an originally shorter exposition, similar to the cases of the Maharahulovada Sutta and the Mahasakaludayi Sutta. So Anālaya phrases himself very cautiously there, but it seems on the contrary to be pretty obvious that that the Pali version has been significantly expanded, and that that expansion took place as it was shifted into the Majjhima Nikaya. The other interesting thing about those details, of course, is that we mentioned before that the somewhat change in the topic. So from the Ekotara Agama, which is the partial parallel, okay, so this one here, partial parallel, after beginning in the same way as the Pali version, this one reports that Sariputta rose from seclusion, visited the Buddha, who asked about Sariputta's pure faculties. Then Sariputta informed the Buddha about his practice of emptiness meditation, and says that the Buddha also practiced such meditation. From this point onwards, the Buddha praised such meditation. From this point onwards, this version continues differently, as according to its report, the Buddha followed up the topic of the superiority of emptiness meditation by describing his own experiences before awakening. And thus the remainder of this sutta is no longer a parallel to the current sutta. So there actually seems to be really three sections to this particular sutta. One is that introductory section, which is parallel in all three of these versions. Then there is the section on the purification of alms round by practicing sense restraint, which is common to the Pali and Chinese versions. And then there's the long section on all of the other aspects of practice to be developed, which is found only in the Pali version. Seems to me that in some ways that all three of those sort of textual entities are somewhat independent. The extra stuff in the Pali probably, I would say almost certainly added when the Pali Majjhima Nikaya was formed. The difference between the first two, connection between the first two, is a little less obvious. But of course, it's more than possible that you know, in 45 years of knowing Sariputta, he remarked about his meditation on more than one occasion. So there's not no particular need that it should, you know, that shouldn't happen more than once, especially as it is obviously used as a teaching device. But still, the fact that the meditation part doesn't connect very closely to the alms round purification part kind of suggests that maybe these also were patched together at a later date. Anyway, that's possible. So this is the Pindapata Parisuddhi Sutta, and despite the, in this case, quite significant differences in terms of the text, the basic meaning and intent of the suttas is all the same, and that is that if you want to get into deep states of samadhi and realization, that you have to start out with the basics and with the very simple things like sense restraint. And in that respect, all of the texts are the same, and all of them are right there in the core of some of what I think is the most beautiful aspects of the Dhamma and the Buddha's teachings, is that such profound things, like being able to abide in emptiness, completely free of suffering and free of defilements, the fact that kind of meditation attainment is grounded in such simple, ordinary, everyday things as walking through the village. How do you walk through the village? And I find that to be a very beautiful and very inspiring aspect of the Buddha's teachings. So any questions on the sutta?
Just asking, like, from my simple understanding, I'm not. If you're abiding in emptiness, then the conceptual thing arises is hatred in my mind, is such and such in my mind. Is this how he means? I don't really understand the relation between abiding in emptiness.
No, that's not while you're doing that. That this is a practice of checking your mind and reviewing your mind, which is going to lead to the abiding in emptiness. If you want to get enlightened and be able to get into these attainments, this is a practice that you have to do to be able to lead towards that. Yeah. So, if we should wish, may I now often abide in emptiness? Yeah.
So it's kind of indicating that once these deluded states have disappeared, emptiness is the resulting backdrop, whatever.
How about resulting backdrop?
Resulting state.
Basically, yes, basically, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. This is the cause, and the meditation emptiness is the effect. And even though I said before that the connection between these is somewhat tenuous, but what is actually very characteristic of the Buddha's teachings, and that you see a number of times in the suttas, is where you start out with something which is a very high Dhamma like this, and everyone goes, wow, this is really kind of amazing. And when it comes to when the Buddha talks about it, he actually talks about it by grounding it in very, very simple things and taking it back to what is it you're actually going to practice. An example of that, for example, would be the Mahagosinga Sutta, where a group of different monks are sitting around discussing what kind of monk would illuminate the Gosinga Wood monastery. And Moggallana says, oh, it would be a monk who had great psychic powers. And Anuruddha said it would be a monk who had the divine eye, and so on and so forth. So they all talk about these monks who are doing these amazing practices. And they're all talking about the results of those practices. You know, they're all talking about the final state of attainment. And they go to the Buddha and they ask him, what kind of bhikkhu would illuminate the Mahagosinga wood? And the Buddha said, oh, if any monk should sit down and meditate and think, I'm not going to get up from my meditation seat before I attain enlightenment, then that's who would illuminate the Gosinga Wood. So to see that difference that the Buddha points to the cause, whereas they were all talking about the result.
Does it mean that if one is being confirmed to Theravada approach to the Dhamma, it will drive one to practice?
Uh-huh, very much, yeah.
If one is the Mahayana because if the opponent is very high of Dhamma and high of binding,
Mm.
It confirms the right path,
That's right, yeah. Yeah, very much so. We find that all through the suttas. I mean, to be fair, I think that there's a strong emphasis in many aspects of Mahayana. There's also a strong emphasis on a gradual training, but maybe that also gets lost. Like if you look, say, for example, at Asanga and the Yogacara Bhumi Shastra, then he has a very strong emphasis on gradual training there.
Yeah, the early development of the Mahayana is very much emphasis on the gradual training.
Yeah, Shantideva too. And isn't that and that's exactly what the 1,000 years of Chinese chant tradition has argued about, the sudden versus enlightenment. Ah, okay. I didn't know that. All right.
I think what they I think what they try to do is deify the teacher, so that the teacher is perfect from the very beginning, just to increase their faith. But when they teach the normal student, they try to say, "Well, you're not like that, so you need to practice the gradual path." Yeah, that's kind of what they do.
Okay, so any more questions on the Pindapata Parisuddhi Sutta? So quite a straightforward sutta. Okay, so we'll finish that.